Hey, welcome to the stream. I'm Josh Rushing. Time is running out to save several major lakes across the world that are at risk of drying up. The crisis is so urgent that scientists warn that some could disappear, well, in just a few years. Now, that would spell a disaster for communities and wildlife. So today we look at three lakes that are rapidly shrinking and ask what action is needed to guarantee their future. So to examine this emergency, we're joined by Allie Murchie. He's an assistant professor at Oklahoma State University. And he's been looking at the shrinking lake in Iran named Lake Urmia. He's in the U.S. city of Stillwater, Oklahoma. In Salt Lake City, we have Carly Beadle. She's a coordinator at the Great Salt Lake Institute and has examined how wildlife has been affected by the erosion of Utah's Great Salt Lake. And in Tel Aviv, Israel, we have Yael Kiro. She is an assistant professor at the Weizmann Institute of Science and has researched the Dead Sea in the Jordan Rift Valley. Hello to everyone. Carly, let's start off with you because the Great Salt Lake has been in the news here recently. Can you tell us what's going on with it?
Yeah, so Great Salt Lake is, like you're saying, one of those lakes that are shrinking. And we're expecting that there's this ecosystem collapse within the next like 5 years. But what's wild is this is not a new problem. It's been going on for years and years and years, but it's something that is just on people's radar. And so there's a lot of action that we're hoping to happen to get this lake to not be so small. And the lake is going down, but even just a couple of inches with the lake elevation will change the ecosystem drastically. So it's a kind of a day-by-day thing that we're monitoring.
When you say ecosystem collapse, what would that look like there?
Yeah, so what's interesting about Great Salt Lake is it's a small ecosystem where there's not a ton of things that are at the lake themselves, but the lake has about 10 million birds that come to it every year for their migration stop. And so if there isn't these brine shrimp or these brine flies, these tiny little organisms in the lake, then the birds would not be able to use the lake for their migration. And again, we're talking millions and millions of birds that use this place. So in terms of the ecosystem, if it can't hold all of these animals, then they just won't be there anymore.
Huh, Allie, what's going on with Lake Urmia?
Well, Lake Urmia, like Carly was talking about the ecosystem collapse at the Great Salt Lake, Lake Urmia has already experienced that phase to a large extent. And this is a lake that's home to brine shrimp Artemia, which is the only place this shrimp is found. And then migratory birds feed off of it. And this lake has basically pretty much disappeared at this point. And we're talking about a major lake, you know, by some accounts, the second largest saline lake in the world. And so it's not like a muddy puddle. It's about the size of the state of Delaware in the U.S. or half the size of Qatar, for those who want to put the size in perspective. Mm. And this whole ecosystem is disappearing, and this, the lake that, you know, could attract a lot of, you know, people to visit for tourism and other activities is turning into a threat as opposed to providing the ecosystem services it's supposed to.
Well, speaking of tourism, the Dead Sea attracts a lot of tourism and has for probably centuries, if not longer. Yael, what's happening there now?
So the Dead Sea lake level is dropping for the past decades in a rate of more than 1 meter per year. So this is a very fast lake level drop. And it is affecting mainly one of the major industries that are affected by this is the tourism around the Dead Sea, because the shore is going away. And in order to have any kind of commercial beach over there, you need to maintain a road. And as you can see here in these videos, the lake level drop is causing the formation of sinkholes, which doesn't allow any tourism along the shore at this state, because it is too dangerous.
So I know we have a long history of the Dead Sea. Has it ever gone through this kind of contraction before?
Yes, there were some times that were very dry in this region that the lake level was even lower than what it is today. 10,000 years ago and about 120,000 years ago, but it never dropped in this rate. So what we are seeing now is a very fast lake level drop that is affected by the human activity and the utilization of the different water resources that used to flow into the lake, and the lake level drop is contributed by the different potash industries that are pumping the brine out of the lake.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because my initial assumption on this was climate change. But in each one of these lakes, as I looked into it, that didn't seem to be the main culprit. What's happening there in Utah, Carly, with the lake? Why is it dropping?
Yeah, you're totally right. And it's interesting because, you know, climate change, Utah, we live in a super dry place. The drought, it doesn't help. But really, a lot of the water that should be going to the lake is getting diverted to agriculture, to communities, to lots of different places. So all of the rivers that should be flowing into Great Salt Lake are going elsewhere.
And Ali, was that the same situation at Lake Umria? This is things that could have been changed?
Well, there are remarkable similarities between the Great Salt Lake and Lake Urmia, not only about the major causes of the lake system collapse. You know, the two lakes are very similar in nature, about the depth, you know, the watershed, you know, their drainage basin, their elevation and everything. And just like in the case of the Great Salt Lake in Lake Urmia, we have dealt with a large number of dam construction projects and rapid agricultural expansion projects and poor water management that has choked this river of and deprived it of the water it needs to survive, because this is essentially a terminal lake. So it's like your bowl of cereal that you know you use in the morning. So if you don't keep feeding the lake with water, evaporation is going to counter that all the water that comes in, and you start losing lake volume and lake area. And this is exactly what's happened in Lake Urmia. And there has been agricultural demand that's been growing, and there is a widening gap between water supply and demand. And the basin is essentially water bankrupt. So we have exceeded the hydrologic carrying capacity of the basin to support those human activities and also sustain and maintain this great the ecosystem and the lake, and with all the services that it provides.
So Ali, are we at a tipping point with Lake Urmia that it's can't come back?
We have practically reached that tipping point, but again, this is a system that in geological timescales has survived. So we let the system work as it would naturally, so the lake can accumulate the water that it needs, and it can come back up. And that if we're able, that's a very big if, because of all these human activities and all the economic activities surrounding how the water was diverted and the new agricultural activities that are being supported by that water. But if we manage to get the water back into the lake can come back, maybe, you know, in a gradual state, and not overnight, not within the next couple of years, but eventually there is hope. So we're not completely giving up on the future of this lake.
And there actually have been major lakes that have disappeared. In fact, there was one down in Bolivia, Lake Popo. Check this out.
The Uru people have been left without land. We trusted in Lake Popo. Our parents trusted in the lake, that it would stay forever, but it didn't. The lake dried up all of a sudden and left us without a job. We have been orphaned. We have no jobs or sources of employment. Where do we go? Where do we find a job? We've been forced to become bricklayers, day laborers, or to herd cattle for other people. It hasn't been easy.
Yael, what's the timeline on the Dead Sea there? How many years are you looking at if it keeps going at this rate?
So we still have time in order to save it, because unlike the other two lakes that we're discussing here, the Dead Sea Lake is about 300 meters deep. So we still have some way to go before it is completely dried up. So we have at least a century and probably much more than that. It depends how fast the industries will pump their brine and if more freshwater resources will be used by the people living in the, around the lake. So, but it's the same issue as Ali said before. It's all a matter of this balance between the freshwater resources that used to flow into these lakes and the evaporation. Mm. And if you are capable to somehow have a decision or a plan that is made in a national level to save these lakes, and you can bring some of the water back, then you can stabilize these lakes on a stable lake level.
And Carly, the Great Salt Lake is not as deep as the Dead Sea, right? You recently went out there, and we have some photos you shared with us. Will you kind of walk us through what we're looking at? I'm going to share these photos with from my computer here. What are we looking at?
Yeah,
here?
So these are microbialites, and these should be underwater. When they're healthy, they kind of look like turf, like astroturf. It's this green and fluffy mat full of life. And so, you know, what one of our students here, we're trying to find that life there, but it's just not there right now. And so, again, all of that should be underwater. So for us, you know, again, just a couple of inches could be such a big issue. And it's interesting to hear Yael talk about the timeline for the Dead Sea, because that's where Great Salt Lake was, where, you know, we were trying to push this issue of it's drying, help, help, help. But then, you know, now that we're at just a couple of years, now that it's like such a bigger issue, but I had wished that it was being talked about in this way 10 plus years ago.
And, you know, I think when it's about brine shrimp, maybe people don't find it as compelling, but we're talking about a lot more than just brine shrimp, actually. And this is Kevin Perry. He's a professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Utah.
As the lake has receded, it has exposed more than 800 square miles of lake bed. And just to put that into perspective, 800 square miles is about the same surface area as the island of Maui in Hawaii. And this exposed lake bed, when the wind is strong and the lake bed is dry, it lifts dust off of this lake bed and pushes it into the surrounding communities. If you breathe that dust over an extended period of time, like decades or longer, then it can lead to increases in different types of cancer, like lung cancer, bladder cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and such.
So when you start to hear health concerns like that for humans, has that elevated the concern of the health of the lake there in Salt Lake City?
Absolutely. You know, I talk about the brine fly and their larvae not doing well. And I'm like, save the flies. And, you know, people nod, but it doesn't really strike them. But anytime you talk about somebody's own health and their community, it's dire, which it is. And that's what we want it. But once it becomes a problem to me, once it becomes a problem to my family, that's when people start to care. So, you know, we're happy that it's something that is being talked about, and there's more changes that are happening, and there's more to it than just the dust as well with that ecosystem. As a scientist, that's what a biologist, that's what I'm mostly concerned about. But
and Ali, is there movement in Iran to try to reverse the course with Lake Urmia?
Well, Lake Urmia's shrinkage was literally a moment of awakening in Iran's environmental activism. Like, people are paying a lot of attention to the fate of this lake, and people actually care more about environmental issues in general, because, you know, the media is covering the issues more. And of course, you know, for a long time, just touching the issue of the major cause of this lake going away, you know, there was confusion about the major cause. You know, was it, is it climate driven? Is it something that we are doing to mess up the system? And for a long time, the predominant narrative was that, you know, climate change is responsible for this lake disappearing. And but we've done our analyses, you know, the water balance analysis, and we've done computer simulations, removing all the dams that were built on in this basin, and we've shown that if these dams weren't built in the numbers they are, you know, the lake would have survived. It would never fall below the ecological threshold that's been designated for it, although it would have the natural fluctuations as drought hits. And in fact, there's evidence from other lakes around the world. There are similar lakes in other countries that they've not only not declined, they have actually gained some area. And this is a very good evidence to show that, you know, we really have to revisit how we're managing these lakes, if we are serious about keeping them for us and for future generations to enjoy them as well.
Are those dams for producing power or for creating other lakes?
But predominantly, they're built to supply irrigation water, and with that have come a change in cropping patterns. So there's more water hungry crops, and you know, whenever you build a dam, you plan for some. Plan for it to support some activities, and of course those demands form around it. So basically, you're overloading a basin, with the new demand that you create, to the point that you can artificially create this water bankrupt system, and at that point things become very difficult to manage. And we've seen that unfold in Lake Urmia Basin.
So Yael, it strikes me that with the other two lakes in question here, there are easier political solutions than perhaps in dealing in the area of the world you're in. Can you talk about some of the politics around trying to save the Dead Sea, or at least change the course it's on?
So the water resources into the Dead Sea, they are all between Jordan, Palestine, and Israel. So and this is a region that is very stressed in terms of water resources. It's relatively dry, and the population is crowded. So every drop of water that is flowing in the Jordan River, someone needs it and need to use it. Mm. So if you will be able to have any decision on a national or any agreement between these different states, you will need a collaboration and agreement that to let the water flow into the Jordan River and then flow into the Dead Sea. And as you probably know, this region has political issues that are not only the water issues in this in this region. So it is definitely complicated.
Sure. We're looking at our YouTube audience, and there's a lot of talk about recycled water. Sounds like a brilliant idea to me, says Ivor Art Ed. Mohammed Sanusi says recycled water is not a new concept. It's part of water conservation. We have a video comment from a water conservationist named Manzoor Wengu, who is in Kashmir. Check this out.
In our beautiful Kashmir, we are surrounded by breathtaking views of mountains and valleys. Unfortunately, the beauty of wetlands and water bodies for the last three decades are in shambles. It's time for united efforts to save them. People's participation is a must. We need to bring consciousness, ehsaas, in our behavior towards our environment. My dream is to see the golden fishes, tourists taking shikara rides, and migratory birds back in these water bodies and wetlands.
And Carly, we have another video comment. This is from a journalist at the Navajo Times named Alistair Lee Bitsoy that I want to share and get you to comment afterward.
What's lacking around efforts to prevent the ecological collapse of the Great Salt Lake is the inclusion of indigenous voices and how the Great Salt Lake is an ancestral body of water to the Diné people, which is where I'm from, the Navajo Nation, or the Ute, or the Goshu, or the Shoshone people. And I feel like those conversations from what I've been gathering in the community here is that's missing, and those conversations need to be amplified and centered, because without preventing the lake from going from ecological collapse, we need to be at the table to offer solutions to the community.
So, Carly, Alistair was saying basically that it feels like the indigenous people aren't at the table. The tribes, you mentioned the Ute, the Shoshone, the Navajo. Is that the case? What's happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We have contacts with those tribes, but it is a missing piece to this puzzle for sure. And I know that with some like tech teams and different committees that are run through state agencies, we've been pushing to get those indigenous voices to be a part of those groups, which they're not right now. So, I mean, I don't have the solution because there's so many factors, but I completely agree that it's a missing piece and a hole in this puzzle, and it's a community that needs to be on at the table, like Alistair was saying. So I know that there's some things in place to get that ball rolling, but it's nowhere near we need to be right now.
Alec, can you talk to us about some recommendations for solutions?
Well, one of the recommendations was brought up by one of the viewers. You know, it's essential to, you know, not use water as a disposable product. You know, in other words, we need to treat the wastewater and make sure it gets to the lake. You know, anything that can help us increase the water supply into the lake is going to be a major part of the solution. And another obvious piece is reducing water consumption in agricultural areas, you know, with using better irrigation technology, higher efficiency irrigation technology, and also making sure that the water savings there actually are used to revive the lake and not go into new agricultural land expansion and create, you know, contributing to increasing consumptive water use in the basin. And so But the bottom line is we have to recognize the right of these lakes and, you know, the environmental rights of these lakes as a user of water and as important social ecological systems, and make sure that they get the water they need.
Why?
I
just want to know, like, how do you tell people that this actually matters, that it's important? Like, what's the big why?
Well, you know, the public health aspect is a major deal. I mean, the lost economic opportunities, the tourism that's gone, that's a big deal. And people, you know, these lakes have importances in the pop culture. You know, the people have created memories around these lakes. But essentially, you know, this is a sign of how well you can manage a natural resource, and it's a perfect indication of a collapsing water governance structure. Of course, in the case of Dead Sea, things are a lot more complicated because you have the transboundary element and the conflicts and everything. But you know, we're talking about in the case of Great Salt Lake or Lake Urmia, these are, you know, close. They're all. These basins are located within the jurisdiction of one single country. I mean, of course, you know, the water governance can be haphazard, or there are many, many different agencies involved, but historically stakeholders have not been engaged in how the development path was being envisioned. And in the case of Lake Urmia, you know, there was an obviously water-dependent path that, took this lake away from all the people in that region who cared about it, and other people that sought value in wanting to visit, and in faraway cities that they don't want to deal with the dust storms and the health effects of it. So, I mean, there is a lot of good intention to and reason to want to revive these lakes.
No, that's a compelling argument, Ali. I want to thank you and Yael and Carly for being on the show today. And one of the most important things we've heard here about these lakes that are disappearing is it can be changed, and it's actually man-made issues. So if we can just use the water a little more smartly, we can actually have maybe a different future on this. So look, that's all we have for today. I want to thank you for watching. Those who joined on YouTube, those who are watching on Al Jazeera English right now, you can always find us at stream.aljazeera.com, and we'll see you next time.